I'll catch you manana. Uncle Sam's only man packing katanas. Remain anonymous while I'm leaving remains.
Welcome to episode 30 of Upshift, No Direction Network's Essence 20 podcast, where every 2 weeks we give you an edge on Essence 20. I'm Ryan Costello, one of the designers of the Essence 20 system, an author on the G.I. Joe Transformers My Little Pony role-playing game core rulebooks, and over a dozen other Essence 20 products.
Oh, nice. I am Jason Keeley, Renegade Game Studios, formerly of Renegade Game Studios, and now of Paizo.
Before we begin, although we have both worked for Renegade on Essence 20 in some capacity, Upshift is not associated with or produced by Renegade Game Studios, and this is not an official Essence 20 podcast.
That's right.
Now, you noticed I said that those three core rule books and over a dozen other products.
Yeah.
So now that's official, because originally to get to dozen, which is just a nice clean word for a lot of things, it included those three core rule books. So I couldn't say core rule books and a dozen because I'm pedantic like that. Sure. But now that I'm at 16, until I get to 28, I'm officially like, this is my sign off or my sign in. Those there three core rule books,
I mean,
and over a dozen products.
That's a lot of stuff.
Now, it does include things like the Kitchen Viper, that like 500 word free PDF that came out for Thanksgiving. Product is very broadly defined here.
It counts. It all counts.
Exactly.
You produce content. It's content. And we all know content is king.
Right. It's just in for one of those Kitchen Vipers. I did that like 10 times over so for some of these products.
Fair enough, yeah.
But they all still count for one.
I'm constantly doing that. Like, I'll go out for freelance. Just give me like 1,000 words so I can just have my name in the credits and just get my hands on a lot of things. That's all I really want.
So I don't do that, but I am worried that people might think like, oh, all these core rule books, like, what did he do to get in on all of them? And it's like, no, like, it was supposed to be 2. Transformers kind of landed in my lap. And yes, yeah. I do a lot.
You do a lot.
I'm doing a lot right now.
Fie to those people.
What?
I said fie to them.
Oh, I thought you told me to fire them.
I am. No, because I am a medieval serf, and
I always suspected.
Look, I can't curse on this one, so I have to get creative.
I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
So people may be wondering where we've been. I thought this was our first episode of the year. I actually snuck in a solo cast on the 5th of January.
I saw that. I saw that.
And it was just rambling about toys.
Well,
yeah, I know. That's what I do. For people that are wondering where we've been, we've both just kind of alternated being busy and having major life events.
Yeah, that's basically it. Yeah. For me, it was a couple personal things. And then also I moved at the end of February. So I was finding a place and preparing a place was most of February. Now I'm here in a new office, which you can kind of see behind me for those of you who are on the Zoom with me. But
yeah, because I still haven't posted any videos.
No, I know. Chugging along here, still in the state of Washington, just a lot closer to Portland now. And also, I have had a title change at Paizo as very recently. I'm now a senior designer instead of a senior developer, which is what I came back to. So it's a minor change. And, if you want to get into, if you want to hear more about the difference between a developer and a designer, John and Ron and I talked about that on Digital Divination.
Yeah, so we won't retread too much of that conversation, but I will say, usually from what I've observed, Paizo is very like tight grip on the designer label. Like they'll give that
kind of,
they'll give a lot of developer labels out. Like it seems like if you come in and it's a new position, you're probably a developer, but there's always been a very select number of designers.
But it's expanding. Honestly, we've been, I think, slowly expanding. I think there was to be a way more sort of like tighter grip on that kind of thing, and now it's kind of ballooning out because we having a lot of stuff to do, having a lot of books to make, and also just sort of having designers work a little more on, since Pathfinder Second Edition started, having a little bit of like, let's look at the rules elements of, Adventure Path and stuff like that, just to give it a once over, so everything is a little more cohesive.
Now, just a shout out to that Digital Divination episode. It is a good episode, and it's really like gets into really the nitty gritty of the industry, and that's a topic I really enjoy.
Kind of both Paizo and Wizards.
Yeah, so, I was fascinated with Ron saying like, oh yeah, that's how Paizo does it, but not at all how Wizards does it. I just thought that's how the industry did it.
No. It's that there's no industry standard. I, you know, like when I was at Renegade, I was specifically like RPG developer. Like there was a RPG in there, and I think like if you look at, you know, we're going to talk about the Renegade Con video. Ben is an associate producer of RPGs. I assume he's doing a lot of the same work that he was doing when he was basically doing development work that with me, and probably even more, you know, more about the planning the books. It's just however the company shakes out and what sort of general responsibilities person has, that title might change. And also just sort of means whatever it needs to me, general responsibility, sort of means whatever it means for that company. It doesn't necessarily translate outwards. Now, you know, if you get a lot of the designer label does seem to sound better to like other people in the industry, I think, in a lot of ways, just because it also kind of also sounds like tech work, because you get a lot of like, actually, developer also sounds like tech stuff too. You know, I sometimes get a weird, like, you know, job emails. It's like, this is a developer. I'm like, this is a software developer. It's not what I do at all. It all gets kind of mixed up and is kind of meaningless in a lot of ways.
Yeah, whereas like Paizo doesn't have producers, right? That's a Renegade thing. Well, not exclusive to Renegade, but that's not something I've seen Paizo do. And I think Paizo uses editor a little more loosely, because before publishing their own RPGs, they were publishing magazines. And I think it uses it more in a magazine sense than most other gaming companies that I know of.
Yeah, I mean, once when we did have an editor in chief, say, right, that was in very much the magazine sense. We don't have that title anymore. You know, we have senior editors and, you know, managerial editors and, you know, that kind of stuff. And, you know, but for the most part, you know, they're editing books and doing a lot of that sort of editing quality control that needs to be done for so much text, you know.
If people do enjoy this kind of conversation, we'll end it here, but you can definitely check out that Digital Divination episode. Yes, that's a Starfinder podcast. Starfinder does not really get it brought up. It's really more an industry episode. Yeah. And so
we've had to kind of, you know, not exactly tread water, but a little bit of tread water to keep from when now and when Starfinder second edition kind of comes out, right?
Yeah. Well, especially because it's like you've got the new edition and you've got the revamped, what is it, Starfinder
Enhanced,
which isn't really like a lot of, there's not a lot of meat on that bone for a podcast to cover, because it's like, here's familiar stuff redone, and then we'll be doing that again next year with the new edition. Yeah. So yeah, you know, I understand. I've been finding the episodes fascinating, and I do appreciate that Ron's regularly appearing again, and the three of you have a fun dynamic.
Fair enough. I'll accept it, counselor.
Now, and before we get to today's topic, we do want to talk about what the future of Upshift is going to look like. I guess we'll just start off with, you'll be leaving the show.
That's right. There's some other sort of projects that I'm working on. And not to say I'm not going away from their direction, because I'm still going to be doing Digital Divination, and we have some other sort of possible little plans that I'm getting into. But there's also a lot of freelance that I wanted to do, and a lot more other things that I want to kind of dig into, which I will probably mention on Digital Divination if it actually happens.
Okay, sure. And as we'll be talking about when we talk about the products that were announced, the stuff that you work directly on at Renegade, like we're coming to the end of it here. Most of this stuff you did not work on. And so just what you'll be able to contribute to any given episode will be less and less. And, you know, I'll miss you, but I also can chat with you anytime I want. We'll just...
Of course you can.
So Upshift will either get a new co-host, or maybe I'll start doing things alone, or maybe I'll start bringing in people just as guests. The exact future of the format is up in the air. I don't want to rush to a decision and then, you know, have to change that. Like I don't like to do. So I'm just willing to say... Yeah. The schedule might be a little off for the next couple of months. The format might change from episode to episode. But once we find a new groove, then that will be what Upshift looks like going forward. I'm not going to restart the numbers like I did when Param left and you came on, because there was like a sizable gap between the two. And it was a sudden end to the original version of Upshift. So like the next episode will be Upshift 31, and you'll still be there. We'll be covering Decepticon Directive. It is Decepticon Directive, right? Why did I?
That's correct. Okay. Yeah. That... No, no, you're 100% right.
And then the episode after that will be your send off, and it'll be a little more bantery, and you'll give a chance to talk about any of the projects that you have kicked off, and we'll just have a good. A good chat. Time. Exactly.
I would also just say that there is something that is coming up down the line for that's coming up for Renegade that I wouldn't mind kind of being just guests showing up to talk about it. But not that I just if, once I see what it is, I'll be keeping up a little bit with what Renegade is doing, but probably not as much as to be able to talk about it here on this on a regular basis.
Fair enough.
But
I suspect I know what you're talking about, and when it happens, or if I'm wrong, whatever it is, you let me know when it happens, and we'll have you on the next episode.
I feel like it has been announced, but I don't really remember now.
Okay.
So there's that, and I don't know when it's coming.
All right, we'll talk about it after. I don't want to talk about it now and edit it out. We'll talk.
We'll talk.
Speaking of talking,
let's do it.
Greatest segue ever.
Speaking of talking,
we're going to be talking about Renegade Con, the 10th anniversary edition. And we're going to start with some semantics because, as I said, I could be pedantic. And I was curious what Renegade meant by 10th anniversary edition because I don't think they've been doing Renegade Cons for 10 years. So I looked into it, and it's the 10th anniversary of Renegade Game Studios. So the company was founded in 2014. They've done several Renegade Cons. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if this was the 10th one, but they haven't been doing it for 10 years because they do multiple Renegade Cons a year. Sometimes they're Renegade Con virtual. Sometimes they're just Renegade Con, even though they're all virtual. There's a lot to the naming conventions that has me scratching my head here.
I don't know. It's just sort of they seem to do it whenever they have some stuff to do. They're almost like I've been kind of thinking them a little bit like those like Nintendo Directs, which kind of happen whenever they happen. It's just like, here's some stuff, we're gonna talk about it. Great. Whether or not con being sort of a not quite an accurate term at all. They're just these are more like Renegade Directs.
There you go.
I guess. Yeah.
I was gonna say something. Shoot, I've lost it.
Okay,
but it was about what you just said. Now I guess we're moving on. Yeah, sorry, nothing. I know sometimes I've got amazing transitions, like speaking and talking. And other times I just trail off, and my brain's like, "No, you got nothing. You've got nothing except for trying remember the thing that you cannot remember."
Right.
So, actually, I guess one more thing about Renegade Con, the way it started, I kind of thought it started with a little weekly this year. So there was a kickoff show whatever. Like the first one was just it's Renegade Con 10th edition, 10th anniversary edition. And I was actually pretty surprised that I got into work early enough that I would be able to make it home in time to see that video. So I was pretty excited that I would be able to see the kickoff because sometimes the announcements are front loaded and then trickle out throughout. I didn't know what to expect. So when I got home and I thought I'd only missed about 5 minutes of it, and I log on and it's like, it'll start in 2 minutes. I was like, oh, starting late right from the first one. That's a little weird. And then it was really only 5 minutes of like Jordan and Aeneas introducing themselves, saying there's going to be some panels, and then ending. Like, it really was a nothing little thing. Oh. And finding out that it's the 10th anniversary of the company, really felt like they could have made a bigger deal about just the whole pageantry of this specific Renegade Con.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I was a little worried, like, if that's the start, where are we going from here? But then every other panel that I saw had the usual energy and the usual, like, full speed ahead of, like, product reveal, talk about it, get all the excitement out, and then move on. Because there were 30 pre-orders that went up as soon as Renegade Con started, like throughout the night. There were 30 products that were for pre-order. We're only going to be talking about the Essence 20 specific ones, not even the Hasbro brand stuff. At this point, it's just too much. So we're going to focus on
Essence. It's a lot. It's more the games, the deck building games and stuff. There's just a lot.
Yeah. And then divorced from that, we've got Heroescape, which is huge. It's like the number of members on the Renegade Game Studios Discord server doubled as soon as Heroescape was announced. And it's funny. So I have access to every channel, including the moderator channel, and I'll see like, oh, this is what's happening with this person, and like, this is what's happening. And because it's all in the HeroScape channels, none of those names look familiar. And it's just like, there is an entire second community in this one Discord server that I'm completely unaware of, because I tend to only stick to the SN20 stuff, which is already several channels with a lot of, you know, activity. So yeah, I applaud the moderators for keeping track of just a lot of stuff going on that server.
Yeah, I mean, huge.
So everything we're going to be talking about was revealed in the first half of the Reveals Action and Adventure panel. It was hosted by Ben and, I believe it was Ben and Anais. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. And it was to cover all the products that were coming out for G.I. Joe, Transformers, Power Rangers, and My Little Pony, which I thought was interesting. I didn't think My Little Pony was under the Action Adventure brand, and nothing was announced for My Little Pony role-playing game. But this is the first time that I've seen that association. Maybe I've just missed it, but that was a surprise for me.
Yeah, but it was just seeing that name in the panel too, like how they've kind of lumped all this sort of the Hasbro stuff into the sort of action and adventure, the RPG and the card games under this umbrella, which is cool.
I take a little credit for that, because Action Adventure, there you go. The Field Guide to Action Adventure, I helped name that. Again, we talked about it was originally the Action Adventure Field Guide, but it really was that Action and Adventure part of the title that cemented what this book was going to be. So it's cool that it's carried on. It's got a life of its own now.
Yeah.
So we had five products revealed for Essence 20. We're going to start with we're going to go in the order that they were revealed, not like by brand or whatever. And the first one was the G.I. Joe role-playing game Beginner Box Bootcamp. This is, I figured you would have some kind of hand in this, but you were not involved in the bootcamp.
No, I wasn't. There was some just general talk about doing beginner boxes. Every time. I think about you every time something like that happens, or every time I think or use the phrase "for the time being."
Yes.
The time being.
Who is this time being?
Oh, right. Anyway, so yeah, there was some talk about it, and it was just a talk at the moment. It was just sort of vague planning. I'm not going to do it. I am very surprised that these are coming out in May.
Agreed. So right. I had nothing to do with these either. Or actually, I was brought in for very minor stuff on the bootcamp just to help pick some of the pre-gens. But yeah, that was the first I even heard that these products were coming out. And this announcement was the first time I realized just how close we were to their full release.
Yeah. When I heard it, it was like, oh, Beginner Box is cool, cool, cool. And they're like, this will be out in May. I'm like, wow. That they would have, like, I kind of left around April-ish. So, just to like, get these things done, they would have had to start like right then, honestly, like to do it, to sort of figure out a way to condense rules. Now, a lot of the stuff is you know, that there's two adventures, and one of them is a sort of reprint of the first chapter of Cold Iron, but still, there's still a lot of stuff. And just sort of taking any rule set and making a beginner box version of it when it needs to just be usable by itself is no small task. And then the production, time, these things take time to print and whatnot. So,
yeah.
Amazing.
So going into the contents of the book, it is a 32-page playing the game booklet, which is the rules for the game, but none of the options for character creation.
Yeah, that makes sense.
26-page, it says first adventure in the bullet points. And from the image, it's Snake Pit, which is the adventure from the core rulebook. And then a 26-page adventure, Operation Cold Iron, Mission 1, Slithering About. So none of this is original writing, but still, just like the layout, time, and I'm sure everything had to go through another like development pass and another editing pass. So yeah, again, the fact that this was put together so quickly is very impressive, especially because like the layout team works on everything, and there's not that many of them.
Yeah, and the fact that there is, we're going to talk about another G.I. Joe book, and the other books that were coming, Combiner's book that's coming out whenever that's coming out, all that stuff is happening at the same time. The Power Ranger book, there's a lot, and it's gonna feel. It makes a little more sense to me that both of those adventures are basically reprints, but just the idea, the development of the taking the rules of SN20 and giving you enough that you can play a pre-gen in 32 pages, It's tricky.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what they did with the rules to see how they condensed it and just how it's been presented. They also were talking about how these two adventures were specifically taken because Snake Pit is for first level characters, Operation Cold Iron Mission 1 is for second level characters. And when they were originally written, it was for one to be able to go straight into the other or stop by the one in the Game Master Guide. Not the Game Master Guide, the GM screen.
The screen, yeah.
So, yeah, so these two can be strung together like that. Now, the fact that they are not just reusing content... Sorry, I'm chuckling because Abigail just peeked her head in and just showed me one of her toys. I told her, I'm recording, but come get me if there's an emergency. So, apparently... squeezing her toy was an emergency. So the fact that it's two reused adventures tells me that this is not for people that already are into the game and also want to get this supplemental thing. It really is for people that do not have any of this material. I do question including part of Cold Iron, because that means then if you go and buy Operation Cold Iron, one quarter of that book you already own or are familiar with.
Fair.
But I mean, the alternative is, I guess they could have done the GM screen adventure since there is a GM screen in this. So it's not like you're going to buy the GM screen.
Oh, there's a screen. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. There's a GM screen.
Oh, yeah. There it is. Yeah.
And it is from the picture, a 3-panel layout instead of a 4-panel layout. So I don't know exactly how different it is, but there is at least some difference between the two.
Okay.
So anyway.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you might excite you enough that you go out and get Cold Iron so you can play the rest of it. But, you know, like you said, you're paying twice for something.
Yeah. And then we've got 8 pre-generated characters. And these, like, we've published some pre-generated characters online and whatnot before, but these are none of them. These are all new pre-generated characters. Just going, in case you're wondering about the order, this is the order of the picture as I was going, like, front to back, left to right. So right, yeah. Steeler is a cool inclusion because he was the original tank driver on the original 13. So he's like right from the beginning, maybe not a super famous character, although he does have a pretty notorious episode of the animated series where he they go to an alternate dimension where G.I. Joe's been wiped out. Cobra has taken over and Steeler specifically gets bit by some kind of insect that's been like irradiated. And he's slowly going crazy over these 2-part episodes. It gets pretty intense. Yeah. And then he gets saved by the Baroness, who is a double agent in this universe, and apparently was in a relationship with the Steeler from that universe, who is dead, and he comes across his own dead body. Yeah, Steeler had only a couple of appearances on the original animated series, but he made a lot up for it in that one episode. So Steeler's in there. Firewall. Firewall's an interesting character. She was one of two characters introduced as like new point of view characters in IDW when they were continuing the Marvel comic. And specifically, the artwork has her in one of Mainframe's alternate outfits. Mainframe being the main computer guy, Firewall being kind of his apprentice that he got killed off in the comics. And she showed up in an outfit kind of like his. And this is the art that was used for this. So that's fun. Firewall's cool. A fun character. She's one of the younger Joes. She's more nerd than soldier, which made her very different from Mainframe, who was like, you thought he was a nerd, but he was actually a Marine and like actually quite a tough guy. Bulletproof. Oh, I should also mention that each of these corresponds to one of the roles from the core rulebook.
Okay.
Which is why I'm kind of confused that it says there are 8 pre-generated characters, because I only saw 7 pictures and there are only 7 roles. So Ben mentioned Clutch in the panel, but I think he might have been thinking of Steeler because they were both vehicle drivers from the original 13.
Yeah.
Or it's possible that they just have 2 vehicle drivers in there. Bulletproof was a member of the Drug Elimination Front. So in the early 90s, when G.I. Joe also went to war with a drug dealer, he was a new character that was introduced as the leader of that force. And I believe he is the officer of this group. Then we've got Dusty. Everyone knows Dusty. Everyone loves Dusty. And he's our ranger. Taurus is our renegade. Taurus is one of the 3 original renegades that were established in the movie. Agent Helix is, she's probably our commando. Actually, I've got a very cool Agent Helix action figure up here. So she's got what are called mantis blades. So these swords that kind of have articulation like a praying mantis claw.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So she is on the autism spectrum and she was kind of like being experimented on to take advantage and weaponize her savantism, and then she was saved by General Hawk, and there's like kind of a ickiness to it in that, like, well, she was being turned into a warrior, and now she's working for this military unit. But yeah, she often teams up with Snake Eyes and Scarlet, and they just do a lot of the commando operations. And I love her design. Yeah. And what's fun is that she was originally created for one of the JoJo video games. It was the Rise of Cobra tie-in.
Oh.
So the movie tie-in. And the company's name was Double Helix that produced the game. And so they, along with Hasbro, coordinated to create this new character. So when the game came out, she also got an action figure that tied into the movie line. And she's just taken on a life of her own. Like, she is now in the classified line. She makes regular appearances in the comics. Yeah, she's probably the breakout new character of G.I. Joe for the last, like, 15 years or so. But another character that gained a lot of traction is Sherlock. So Sherlock is a SWAT officer with a cybernetic arm. And so she's got a unique look. I believe she's the Vanguard of the set. That makes the most sense out of everything here. The Vanguard being the one that's a little bit technology-based, a little bit leadership, a little bit big guns. Mm-hmm. Actually, I would guess that she has the bodyguard focus. And then the mysterious eighth one. Could be just that there are eight ones in the Transformers book, which we'll talk about in a second, in the Transformers box.
Okay.
Which makes sense because they introduced the Raider role in Decepticon Directive, so there are eight roles for Transformers.
Oh, okay.
So it's either there are eight, and one of the roles was used twice and was not pictured in the picture, or that's meant to be seven.
Right.
And then to finish off the box, there's a set of G.I. Joe dice that look very similar to the ones you can buy on their own, but also look a little bit lighter, which could just be the lighting of the picture. So I'm not sure. They're either exactly the same or very similar. And a GM screen, which is a little bit smaller, and it's three panels instead of four.
Cool.
And we'll talk about the Transformers beginner box. And then I guess we could just talk about, you know, the significance of beginner boxes and how they can best be used by people to get people into the game. So Transformers, it's almost a symmetrical product. 32-page playing the game booklet. Because this is the system neutral part, other than stuff specific to like converting different modes, which does not take up a lot of room, I wouldn't be surprised if they were 99% the exact same book.
Text wise, most likely it's going to be laid out art wise differently, more Transformers than G.I. Joe's on it, but that makes sense. Yeah.
And then two adventures, one of them's 28 pages instead of 26, the other one's 32 instead of 26, but it's Troubled Waters, which again, the adventure from the core rulebook. And a second adventure, The Time Is Now, Chapter 1 Rollout. So Time Is Now is the adventure series. So exactly the same as Operation Cold Iron, only now it's The Time Is Now.
Great. So I guess I did work on these a little bit.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. 8 pre-generated characters. So to me, a lot of these are way more obscure, but I know G.I. Joe like the back of my hand. So I might look at someone like Sherlock and not think she's that obscure. Without realizing that to a large audience, nobody knows who Sherlock is.
Right, yeah. I mean, just off the top of my head, like Hound and Beachcomber sound familiar.
Yeah, so going through the list, there's Smokescreen is one of the three like Corvettes. There was him, Prowl, who was the cop car, who was the most famous one. Mm-hmm. And there was Bluestreak, who was Silver. And that's basically his most notorious thing. Smokescreen was kind of a rally car. He was blue, unlike Bluestreak. And I don't remember any particular exciting things about Smokescreen. I just know that, he is one of the original ones. Hound is the original Jeep. Played a big part in the original four-part miniseries. In fact, I think he is the first character that really comes to prominence on Earth in that original miniseries. And then he shows up a lot in the comics as well. Springer is fairly famous. He was in the Transformers movie. He was a triple changer. So he's probably the default mode master. He turned from, I forget if it was a fast tank or an armored car. One of the two, but he also turns into a helicopter. He's one of the new characters introduced in the animated movie. Probably the least significant one of them, but he is there for the whole movie. And then Beachcomber is like a pacifist. He's famous for this one episode where he finds this valley where he gets like this gold laser-proof coating on him. And, you know, that's pretty cool. But what he really likes is that this is just untouched valley where animals are playing. Right. Decepticons find out about this laser-proof coating, and they go there. The Autobots join in. And then it's just this major firefight between two sides. that are coated in gold. So all the lasers are deflecting off of them. They destroy nature. And then eventually the Autobots get the Decepticons to win. They celebrate. It's like, we won. And then it just cuts to Beachcomber, kind of sadly looking at the destroyed landscape, being like, but did we win? Like,
but at what cost?
Exactly. And that's really the only major Beachcomber storyline I can remember. But, you know, it left an impact. And then the other characters, we've got Gage. Gage, I mostly know from the Transformers My Little Pony crossover, which is just like it's bookended by a plot, but it's mostly just like single shot stories. And it's Gage and a couple of other younger Autobots. I believe Wheelie's there, teaming up with Scootaloo. And I think all of the Cutie Mark Crusaders, or it may have just been Scootaloo. So it's just like kids being fun together, even though half of them are ponies and half of them are Autobots. It's a fun little story.
Yeah.
Nova Star was Firestar in an episode of the original animated series where it was just like, here's a bunch of female Transformers from Cybertron. Let's follow them around for one episode and then almost never see them again. And then most of those have been revisited in action figure form. And yeah, because they couldn't copyright Firestar because of the Marvel character, they changed her to Nova Star. Which I like Nova Star. I think it's a cool name.
Yeah, it's a good name.
Anode, I know nothing about. I did a little research.
Anode?
Yeah, that makes much more sense.
Yeah, cathode and anode, basically. Or what are they called? The electronical terms.
Okay. Well, I looked it up. She's almost 20 years old. She was introduced in a 2005 comic. I didn't read that era of Transformers, and she has not been revisited more recently. So she's just not on my radar. Aileron was also introduced around the same time, but I am more familiar with Aileron because she is an homage to the GoBot Crasher, which was...
Oh, really?
Yeah, so the GoBots, there were the GoBots, and then there were the Renegades were the bad guys, and the main three Renegades were Psykill, I forget the helicopter guy's name, but then the sports car was Crasher, and even though Aileron is an Autobot, she has the same like color scheme and like a lot of the same facial features as Crasher. And like by now Hasbro owns the GoBots. Like Hasbro owns most of the 80s. So they're not ripping themselves off. It is an homage.
Fair enough. So yeah, like I could see why this particular lineup can, you know, has a lot of sort of maybe more sort of slightly more obscure Transformers because it is so tricky to find lady Transformers that are in the continuity without sort of making new ones. And these are some good interesting choices, at least. You know, they're there, and they're, you know, they're, you know, you know, I think I was just looking up Anode, and it, and you know, it, and I take this with a grain of salt, but she's transgender.
Oh, really?
And the yeah. Oh, cool. I mean, I'm looking at like the Transformers wiki, but like apparently you know, assigned male on Cybertron, and then you know, did whatever Transformers need to do to, you know, change their gender.
Now, if that was done in 2005, that could have been very advanced thinking, or it could have been handled kind of icky, but retroactively has kind of been corrected. I don't know. But that's really cool. I'd never heard of that.
Again, just looking this up on the internet, so take that with a bit of a grain of salt.
But the other thing about this selection of characters is these are first level pre-gens, and I don't think anyone would question any of these characters, except maybe Hound, maybe Springer, being that low level. Whereas had you said RC in there or Windblade, it would feel not appropriate.
You'd have been like,
You got a set of Transformers dice. Again, the colors look a little different. It looks like it's got the same red but bluer numbers, whereas the base one is just red with white numbers, but it might just be the picture. And the GM screen, which once again has the same image, but it's three panel instead of four.
And sometimes, you know, some of these pictures earlier on are electronically generated.
True.
To remember that, right? They're photoshopped. So that might be a reason why the coloring is different. It's tough to tell too sometimes but the art is probably the same art, right? It's just but you take the art and you kind of do the thing where you make it look like a flat piece of paper. I think that's like a lot of, you know, sort of images on like say like Paizo's website or the books. They're mostly just photoshopped instead of a picture of the actual book because we don't have it yet.
but by now, like the Paizo team has put together so many of those preview images. Yeah. Like, I defy anyone to tell that from a real book.
It's true.
So then there were two G.I. Joe source books that are announced. And that kind of shocked me. Like, obviously,
yeah,
I knew what was in the pipeline. And honestly, of the two, I was more excited for the second one we're going to be talking about, which I really did not expect to be announced now, even though I had seen some art. Like, it feels like both of these books, the art was being done at the same time, and so both of them felt far along, even though one was written much earlier than the other one. Anyway, well, let's get into the books, and then we can talk about the production side of it. So first, we've got The Quartermaster's Guide to Gear, which I did not write on. I actually have a very interesting relationship with this book in that I was too busy to take it on as a writing role. So at the beginning, I did the outline, and then I kind of handed it off. And this was the one book of the ones that were announced that you were involved in, but it was when you were passing the torch to Ben. So this outline, this was just kind of like floating around between the three of us, and nobody had a firm grasp of it. But a team was put together. I don't remember. I don't. Well, anyway, they never announced the authors ahead of time, unfortunately. But I think there was like six or seven authors on this one. But then after it went to editing, my time freed up, and they asked me if I could do a pass on it, and I did. And then it was like, well, this is it's almost a development pass, and it's almost an editing pass, but a lot of it was, some of it was for consistency with the other books, because I know the system very well, and some of it was G.I. Joe lore. So So what are we going to credit you as? And I got a G.I. Joe consultant credit on this book, which now I get to put on my resume. I know we were talking at the beginning about how I'm not chasing credits, but that's a fun one. I get to say that I have worked professionally as a G.I. Joe consultant.
There you go. That's good.
But conceptually, I think people all know what to expect. It's an equipment book. But if you go through the bullet points, you might be surprised with some of the directions we went with it. It says 16 new weapons from G.I. Joe's history, a new armor type, 40 upgrades, and 18 new vehicles. So we'll stop there, because I have seen some comments saying, like, 16 new weapons in the gearbook? That does not feel like a lot. But I want to put the emphasis on the from G.I. Joe's history, because the way we handled gear in the core rulebook was, this is broad and generic, and with the upgrade system, you can make any weapon you can imagine, which was one of the challenges for our gearbook when we went that customizable right from the get-go. So the fact that these are from G.I. Joe's history, I think, is the part to emphasize in that part of the sentence. And also, I'm going to point out a new armor type. This is actually a lot more elaborate than it might sound. It's not just... you know, there's bulletproof vests, and now there's, you know, the electricity proof vest. No, this is actually almost an alternate system, but the two different armor systems play together nicely. And this was not on my outline. This was just something that one of the authors kind of concocted on their own and filled up a bunch of space, and it ended up really cool. Then we got the 40 upgrades and the 18 new vehicles. Right. Someone also was saying, like, 18's not a lot of vehicles. 18's a lot of vehicles. Like, that's as many vehicles as we've had in any other book, I'm pretty sure, except maybe the core rule book.
Yeah. Even then. And then you've got what? Like, new, it's got to have to be new. Like, there's already been just a good number of them already presented.
Yeah.
So, like, there comes a point, there's a diminishing returns situation as you're making things up. Yeah.
Yeah. And because, like, if you look at the cover, the closest vehicle to Mirage, who's our point of view character, we'll talk about Mirage in a second, but that's the Ram, and the Ram was all the way from the core rulebook. When you start looking further in the back, then you'll start seeing some vehicles that have not been statted out up till now. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're in this book. Yeah. They're not listed in the bullet points, so I couldn't say, but maybe.
Maybe.
The fact that Mirage is on this cover, and he is the only recognizable cover, is fascinating to me. So Mirage, very obscure character. But I glammed onto him because he was kind of my self-insert character, because he has a blonde crew cut and he kind of looks like me.
Oh, sure.
And I love a character with visor. So this was a character that I immediately became one of my favorites when he came out. But I had nothing to do with him being picked for the cover.
Being on the cover?
Exactly.
Okay, okay.
At some point in the core rulebook, I think in like an example in the equipment chapter, I refer to him as the quartermaster, and when you're making a prototype weapon... you know, they'll send it off to Mirage and his team, and they'll see if they can put it together. And that was just to put a little flavor into the example. And I believe Ben is the one who did this art order. He took that and he ran with it. And so...
Sure did, yeah.
So again, this character, like... We talk about, like, the A and the B list. Like, he is the Z list. Like, nobody knows about Mirage. But he is the star of this cover.
He gets to have the he gets to have his own cover.
But also
very good.
It works perfectly. Like, he's a teched out dude. His colors are a little brighter on the action figure, so they've subdued him to he makes him fit in more with like just the across all eras G.I. Joe look rather than the 90s, which was a little more influenced by the Ninja Turtles colors. It's a fun surprise that he made it onto the cover. It's in such a prominent role.
Amazing.
Getting back to the bullet points. A new focus for each role in the G.I. Joe role-playing game. From the drone pilot for infantry to the neutralizer for technicians. So this, I remember, was a point you had when I turned over the outline that there was a lot of pages dedicated to focus options. Did you want to expand on that?
Gosh, do I even remember?
I believe the idea was just that this is a gear book, and so for it to be so much role focus.
There's some of the certain amount of like, yeah, you having new sort of focuses for the game is interesting to other people who don't want it or aren't just buying it just for the gear, right? They might get a little something, but yeah, just it should be a gear book, right? Not necessarily a character book that has some gear in it.
Well, all of the focus options are gear themed. The drone pilot for the infantry, for example, like that makes sense. We already have a lot of ways to access drones as characters, but for one to specifically be infantry focused, like you could see a different relationship between a drone and an infantry character than you would for a drone and a technician. But speaking of the technician is already the gear focused class. So we went with the neutralizer, which is the anti-gear technician, just to mix things up a little bit. And then along similar lines, 3 new origins, 8 new influences from the Junker to the Futurist for gear-centric characters. We have some fun ones in there, but we can't go into details.
Yeah, exactly.
Guidance for historical, retro, future, and cyberpunk settings allows GM to explore the past and future technology on the battlefield. So yeah, G.I. Joe being a 40-year-old brand, at least like the re-American Hero version of it, which was always set with technology a little bit in the future, means that we've got actual 80s technology, we've got the technology we thought the future was going to have when we were in the 80s, and then we've kind of got that through the 90s and to the 2020s, and we've got what we now think of as future tech. So there was a lot of ways that we can customize equipment options for based on the different setting. And so some of this, it does say it's guidance, some of it is new options to help craft a specific feel for your campaign.
It's definitely an interesting aspect to glom onto for a gear-focused book to also just say like, well, this is also kind of like a setting book in a way that says, oh, you want to make G.I. Joe Cyberpunk, this is what you do, you know, and this is how you use the gear. You know, doing it from a gear POV is very cool.
But it's also because the gear really sets the tone for the campaign. If somebody is really looking for a very military campaign and you've got people going around with drones and with, you know, future, very future tech, cybernetic parts have been introduced to the game at this point. So it really is just giving GMs permission to say, no, I want to craft a certain story, a certain feel.
Right.
And just because these options exist in the game doesn't mean that they have to be in every single campaign every single time.
Exactly.
And then it says, ready to use G.I. Joe and Cobra bases, including the Cobra Terror Drones and the USS Flag aircraft carrier. This, again, there's a lot more going on here than this bullet point summarizes. But I can't say anymore.
There was, fair enough. I remember there being some discussion about how to do this kind of thing.
Yes.
Is it a vehicle? What's a vehicle? What's a base?
Yeah, exactly.
So, one of these things that are base, are giant, but they can still move like vehicles, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, so people will have to pick up the book to see how we solve that problem.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
And then, the book that I was much more heavily involved in and was shocked that this was already announced. And they previewed the cover, which is great because I sketched that cover and then they made it much, much better. But the product page does not have the preview of the cover. You'd have to watch the video. Oh, and the video did even have the not final art. So that's probably why it's not up on the product page. But Zartan is at like a computer console. Storm Shadow is crashing through a window with his bow drawn. Yeah. Zartan's getting his gun out, but he's clearly caught off guard. And in the background on the monitors, you've got several of the International Joes and different factions that are represented here. Because, as the first bullet point says, this is an in-depth look at the history of the Arashikage, which is represented by Storm Shadow on the cover. The Dreadnoks, represented by Zartan on the cover. and the October Guard, who all are on the monitor in the background, how these independent factions impact G.I. Joe and Cobra, and how to run campaigns partially or entirely dedicated to the Urashikage and Dreadnoks. The fact that these are independent factions is fun. So not only do they fit the Intercontinental Adventures theme, but none of these are straight up Cobra or G.I. Joe, unlike Tiger Force and Python Patrol. So there's a lot more meat on the bones of what we can do with these characters. Like, the Urashikage has an entire set of background characters in G.I. Joe lore, significant characters that have now been featured in multiple of the live action adaptations of the franchise. Yeah. And it's not directly connected to G.I. Joe. It's connected to a single character who is then connected to G.I. Joe, who is then, become one of the most important characters in the franchise because of it. I'm talking about Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes, obviously. So yeah, the importance of the Urashikage is what makes Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes so important as well. Whereas the Dreadnoks, they were straight up, they were all toys. We just constantly got more and more Dreadnoks. A shocking number of Dreadnoks. Now that I had to actually stat them all out and try and fit every single Dreadnok option that we haven't had. And we've already had a lot of Dreadnok options in other books. We did not shy away from Dreadnoks. And yet it was still tough to summarize everything into a single chapter. And the October Guard, who were mentioned, they play a background role in Operation Cold Iron, but by then we didn't even have the contact rules. We didn't even have the NPC stat block that you see in field guides. So they have not been mechanically fleshed out. So until now, they're getting a whole chapter, which was always like, do we touch the October Guard? They've got this important part of G.I. Joe history, but they are connected to, they're connected to Russia, who are not
Russia. Yeah,
they are the real world bad guys right now. And how do we say, here's the fictional equivalent of those real world bad guys, but our equivalent isn't bad guys because it was from a time where things were they were a little grayer,
a little different.
So we found ways to make it to separate them from Russia specifically, because they were never actually Russian. They were the Soviet faction, and the Soviet Union's not here anymore, but there is a new version of the Soviet Union, which is the Warsaw Pact, which is not really as influenced by Russia and its politics. So that gave us some freedom to make these characters in this area that if you want to make them the good guys of your campaign, it's not that bad.
It's not problematic. Yeah. Fair. Yeah.
That was probably the biggest challenge of the whole book.
Yeah, I bet. So if I may say something that's a strong opinion, I feel like when I saw this, this feels like it's really, and I don't understand why it isn't, this should have been the first Factions and Actions volume.
Okay.
Because it's got the bigger, it's got a Rush Clock, it's got some of the biggest names in the G.I. Joe sort of non-G.I. Joe Cobra world, that it feels Tiger Force and Python Patrol, they're known quantities, and it makes sense. I know the reasons why it's not the first volume, but it really should have been the first volume, and then we go into the slightly more obscure-ish factions later on.
By doing it this way, it's kind of like, here's Iron Man, now let's build to the Avengers. Now Iron Man becomes more significant because it's the first one.
It doesn't take anything away from either of these, but you don't have to have one to get the other, right? It doesn't take, it's not like something was presented in book one that you need for book two or anything. You can get them whatever, right? Whenever. It's just, there's a certain amount of And again, I sort of there was some talk about getting the stuff with the October Guard, right? Getting the stuff with the Urashikage, right?
Yep.
That took more.
Storm Shadow
takes more time.
Is only in the game as a contact at this point, even though he's got a miniature in the box set and he shows up in more art than almost any other character in the core rulebook. But his threat stat block was taken out when we were pruning for space, and there was some concern that it might have been problematic. So we wanted to make sure we got it right, because it is such an important part of G.I. Joe history. Yeah. And specifically because the kind of concerns we had about just representing him as just either a stereotypical evil ninja or too much mysticism applied to it. This was all stuff that Larry Hama, an Asian American, also addressed in the 80s. And he specifically was not happy that the first Asian character introduced to the line was a bad guy, and so he set out to make him the most fleshed out, interesting guy in the whole line.
Right, exactly. you know, it's good that the time was taken to sort of do get this right, but there's a certain amount of like, you know, this is, I mean, you know, you look at, I don't know, I mean, Star Wars Empire, right? Like, you know, second volumes or sometimes, because you get the you work out the kinks and you get the bumps smoothed out, that ends up being the sort of the better of the two. So I get it and I understand it, but it's also just sort of like, seems like the bigger factions maybe should have been first,
Yeah, fair enough.
right?
I mean, we've still got big factions to go too. We have not
Fair
covered the
enough.
Iron Grenadiers.
Oh
The
yeah,
Crimson
that's a good
Guard
point.
could be their own faction, although we've covered a lot of Crimson Guard. Like, just
That's yeah.
percentage-wise, most of the Crimson Guard has been covered. But
Well, like you said, but there was already a lot of Dreadnought stuff, and we did some of that in Cobra Codex. Like, you know, what more do you do? Well, luckily, there's a lot more to do for a lot of these, so fleshing them out now, eventually getting to it. You know, hey, that's what happens. You can't do everything at once.
Which was the original plan. Factions of Action was just supposed to
Fair
be one
enough.
book, and then it got split into two or more.
Yeah.
And honestly, we've gotten some stuff in, like, we would have never got to the Dino Hunters if we just had one book,
Right.
but they got in there,
Yeah.
and people on the Discord love bringing up the dinosaurs that are in Factions of Action Volume 1. It's some of their favorite entries.
You get the Dino Hunters, and then you do the crossover with Dinobots. You've got a whole thing going on there.
Somebody needs a hug.
Oh,
Hey,
hello.
Daddy.
You're welcome. He can hear us.
I didn't hear that.
Oh, she asked if you can hear us.
I heard, thank you, Daddy, but I didn't hear
Okay, yeah, she said,
anything
can you
after
hear
she walked
us? And
away.
then when I said yes, she was like, oh.
Yeah,
Right, getting through some more of this. So, contacts and threat stat blocks for key members of each faction, including multiple versions of the long-awaited Storm Shadow. So we wanted to make sure, like, this was the ultimate version of Storm Shadow, and Storm Shadow is a complicated character who was both affiliated with Cobra and the Joes, and so that's why we couldn't just have one single Storm Shadow to represent all the ways you might need Storm Shadow
right.
in any G.I. Joe or Cobra campaign. Contact and threat stat blocks for international characters, like a G.I. Joe's Canadian member Backstop, my man, Australian member Skymate, and Cuban member Snowstorm. I saw somebody that was reviewing the announcements, and they got to this, and they weren't really G.I. Joe fans, and they were like, wait, a Cuban member named Snowstorm, does it snow in Cuba? And that's what makes Snowstorm so fun, is that he is Cuban, where it does not snow, or if it does snow, you know, something's gone wrong.
Something's gone wrong,
And he had
right?
to deploy to this Arctic assignment, and so he invented this power suit to keep him warm in the snow. And G.I. Joe basically recruited the power suit because it was so advanced. And so this guy who hates the snow so much he made a power suit for it now has to go on all these Arctic missions and is considered an Arctic specialist.
Oh
The
boy.
tragedy of Snowstorm. Again, this is why I love G.I. Joe so much. There's just all of these characters that, like, they get lost in the shuffle with all the Dukes of the Roadblocks, but, like, a guy like Storm Shadow has a story to be told, and he makes a fun NPC for the background of the character, or just a fun character to explore in a threat or contact stat block in a book like this. And I get to bring them to people's attention. And going back to that preview image, one character that is not listed here on the bullet point, but because he's shown on the cover, I feel comfortable talking about it. It's Wolf Spider, who is the newest original character that's been added to G.I. Joe. He just got a new action figure. And he is like a rescue EMT. So, like, if it's like a hot war zone and you need to get to the people, then you send him in and he'll be hanging off a helicopter. He'll rush in past the bullets. So it's not like Lifeline. It's not like the existing medics. He is specifically someone that is there to do, like, the really dangerous extractions. And it's cool that, like, he was just announced around the time we were outlining this. We know because of the. Sometimes the classified figures, they don't have file cards anymore, but sometimes their name is presented as, like, first name, code name in quotation marks, and last name. And he was one of them, and his name is of Indian descent. And so we were able to extrapolate from that it's like, oh, we could fit him in with the International Joes. Like, we could get this brand new character in the next book or one of the next books coming out.
Nice.
So it's really exciting that, like, right out of the gate, this character already has been adapted into the core rulebook.
That's pretty cool. For a second, I thought you were going to say that his name was presented as Spider, comma Wolf.
Spider, Wolf Spider, Wolf.
Wolf.
Well, so Alpine, his real name is Albert Pine. So he would be Al
Why
Alpine
not?
Pine.
Albert Al Alpine
Yeah.
Pine. Ooh, okay.
Finishing up this book, we've got new factions, origins, influences, and focus options, 40 new general perks, 17 new gear and upgrades, 11 new vehicles. Really? We fit in that many? All right. Well, I mean, bullet points don't
sure,
lie.
Why not?
And more. I'm trying to... 11 vehicles? Really? I'm just surprised. I know Dreadnoughts
okay.
have a few vehicles in the October Guard.
Yeah.
There's at least a couple of Rush Cogged in. Anyway, okay.
These are all just... Yeah, these are all just regular G.I. Joe tanks painted red.
Painted ninja
for that to regard. Painted ninja. It's right over there. Can't you see it? No, I can't. But then I've done my job.
At lunch today, and this is, we don't have time for tangents, but I'm going on one anyway. A coworker mentioned that her brother works for CSIS. And I was like, your brother works for CSIS? And half the people at the table were like, what is CSIS? I'm like, it's like the Canadian FBI. They're like, I've never even heard of this. It's like, because we're good at our job.
It's not supposed
yeah.
I don't know, the FBI is supposed to be secret.
And maybe they're more like the Canadian CIA. I'm not even sure.
There you go. Fair enough.
All right, Beneath the Helmet. That's the last of the source books that was announced. This is a Power Rangers source book, and it emphasizes the non-Ranger side of the Power Rangers life. I'll go through the bullet points. This is one I had nothing to do with, and it's the franchise I know the least about, but I do have some opinions
sure,
on this
yeah.
book. So just going through the bullet points first. Player and Game Master content, along with story ideas for teenagers with attitude, not merely Power Rangers. I don't know what that means, but that's intriguing. Dino Charge, Dino Thunder Rangers, their Zords and equipment and adversaries. New player options. Aqua, Graphite, and Dark Ranger role options. All right. Again.
Apparently, yeah. they did all kinds. I did like no, they did so many different types of Rangers. Yeah. Like just like color and I... theme wise
the Graphite Ranger,
that you could get a Graphite Ranger. Yeah,
all right. Discover the stories between adventures with new downtime rules, detailing your home base, creating your own team, which I suspect that's like the meat of the concept here. Then real world threats to face with the mask comes off, and challenge legendary villains like Mesagog, Sledge, and Lord Arcanon, along with their henchmen and minions. So up until now, as an outsider looking in, it has felt like every Power Rangers source book has kind of been a mini campaign book. Like, In Time is for the Time Traveling Rangers. Across the Stars is for the Space Traveling Runs.
Space Rangers, yeah.
From the reaction, it does seem like there's enough content in each book for players of any campaign. So it doesn't matter if you're playing in a time or space traveling one. Each book has content for it. But this one really feels like the first one that every single or most iterations of Power Rangers will be able to use this book, specifically the idea of the downtime rules, threats when the masks come off. Like, this is where you're facing bullies and homework and curfew and stuff. And that really is like a major part of the Power Rangers story that, you know, maybe not be as exciting as the, you know, martial arts against giant monsters parts, but most of the episode, or at least half the episode, is these characters in their day lives. And most of them, when you're talking about your favorite character, you're calling them by their first name. Because,
but they're alter egos.
Exactly.
They're not their ranger. You're not calling them the Pink Ranger. Yeah, because there might be multiple Pink Rangers or Yellow Rangers or Red Rangers. You have to distinguish them, and what better way to distinguish them than their actual names?
Yeah, but also because that's when you got to know these characters the most. Not when they're quipping with bad guys, but when they're dealing with their day to day lives, getting their day jobs and whatnot. So I think this is a great idea for a Power Rangers source book. Yeah. And I really hope that it, the Power Rangers players are super happy with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a classic thing with these types of like superhero type shows. You always have, you know, Peter Parker, Spider-Man dealing with all of his Peter Parker, depending on which Peter Parker kid, you know, in Queens or whatever. You've got, you know, and, you know, just sort of like, it's a huge, it feels like a huge part of the game. Another one of the sort of like, oh, it's good that they finally get a chance to dig into this section, this part of it. It's gonna be, and I think people will like it because people like to do the role playing of like, well, now I have to go to the school dance and it's really awkward because, you know, I'm late because I had to fight, you know, a giant monster made out of teeth or whatever, and now I have to explain to my date that why, because she doesn't know who I'm, a Power Ranger, right? You know, like, yeah,
is that a hickey? It's like, oh no, I was like lashed by a giant tongue monster.
Exactly. Like, I mean, there's stuff that's like maybe you don't want to actually quantify it into rules,
Right.
but at least having like advice on how to do that kind of stuff is important to a Power Rangers game, I think.
I also think it is content that could have been in the core rulebook, but it's better now that Essence 20 has matured. We have a better grasp of how to
Yeah,
design
flesh it
for it,
out.
and now is a good time to introduce this kind of content to the game.
You can use a lot of the stuff that's in Field Guide, right? To
Sure.
maybe deal with to do it how to do a challenge that is literally like finishing a group project
Yeah.
when you can't tell the people that you're with the group project with that you've got to run because you get and that does something with, you know, maybe something mechanical and on a scale of some kind of what grade you're going to get in the final thing. And it's important that you get that final grade, because if you don't get the final grade, you're not on the sports team or what, which is also important to your character. You know, there's so many little threads
Yeah, you get to
that
do
you can
like
pull on.
mix up science skill tests with deception skill tests.
There you go. Yeah, exactly.
So that's it for the Renegade Con 10th Anniversary Edition Essence 20 announcements. I am excited for all of them, even the ones I didn't work on. Like, obviously I'm excited about the ones I've worked on because I get to talk about them, but like beginner boxes are always useful. They're strong, like it's healthy for the hobby, and
Oh yeah.
yeah, it shows that Essence 20 continues to grow, continues to appeal to new audiences, and I like that. And yeah, there was really only one non there was only one thing outside of my wheelhouse, and I think it's really cool and
Right.
exciting.
I'm curious if they're gonna send me copies since they are using material that I did develop.
That is a good
Or not.
question.
I actually like hopefully I get a credit in the beginner boxes, right? Because of those adventures. Three out of four. No, two out of four.
You're right, because you didn't
Because
you
I
didn't
didn't
work
work
on
on the
Trouble
I didn't work on the
Waters.
core rule
Right.
book. No, that was core rule book stuff that was done when by the time I got there.
Still, one for each beginner box, so
Exactly, right?
definitely
But if I
deserves that.
don't, whatever, it's also fine. But thank you. If I don't, that's also fine. But I'm just more curious. It's just curious whether or not like certain other things and you know in the future. Which reminds me, I do have to double check to see if they have my new address.
Oh, yeah. All right, let's get ready to wrap things up. First, I do have a shout out, and I don't want to skip over it. And that is because this weekend, so actually, really, starting the day that this episode releases, is Breakout Con. This is a Toronto board gaming and role playing game, and a little bit interesting, sorry, industry focused gaming convention. And I'll be attending with my family. This will be our first gaming convention as a family, and our first 7-8 hour road trip as a family. So, a lot of things are going to be tested on this weekend here. But I'll also be running two different events. I'll be running a G.I. Joe role-playing game event called Mass Endangerment, and then Fight for Freedom and
Ooh.
Friendship, which is an all-in Essence 20 event. I'll actually be running the same adventure twice, but one of them will have all G.I. Joe pregens, and one of them will have a real smorgasbord of like ponies, Cybertronians, Power Rangers, and G.I. Joes. And that'll be
Cool.
each character. So,
I'm saying I have
no,
four
each of those
characters,
characters
maybe one of
will
each.
have options from wherever.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so that is this weekend. It is in Toronto. If you are heading that way, cool. If you happen to see me, say hi. This is like the sixth or seventh Breakout Con. They started slightly before the pandemic, so it's really hard to count them. But it has
Yeah.
grown every year, and I've been to three of them. And the first one, which was like a quaint, small, cozy convention, and by the third one, it was massive. It was taking up half of the hotel, so I was really impressed with how quickly it grew.
Nice.
But I'm not surprised. Toronto has a lot of influential board game designers in the space, and so people go
Cool.
there to, to get the deeper inner workings of the gaming industry from a Canadian perspective.
Nice.
Do you have any shout-outs?
No.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us for episode 30 of Upshift. I almost said No Direction, but no. If you want to know more, you can go to nodirectionpodcast.com. I want to thank our patrons. You can find out more at patreon.com/nodirection. And thank you to Word Burglar for the use of Letters from Snake Eyes Part 4. You can find out more at wordburglar.com. So we will see you in. Oh, wait. Until next time, I'm Ryan Costello.
And I'm Jason Keeley. And if a pop fowl can bean you better believe a cobra can. I don't know. I think I found these quotes. I just looked them up when I'm trying something that sounds funny, and I just say it. Apparently, General Hawk said it at some point.
Really? I don't. All
Yeah.
right. I'm gonna have to track that one.
Wait,
down.
Was there a baseball episode?
There's a football episode of the Deep Series. Okay. Pretty famous.
Maybe I found something that someone made. Like the undead, I let him in every day. My main meditation was taking him down. My pain medication, Shanna sighed. And she knew she couldn't call me, at least until I found out what happened to Tommy. That mission was private. For now, the objective was stopping the threat of this venomous collective spreading across the globe. I was ready to lock and load with flash, grand slam, clutch, zap, and rock and roll. Hawk, stealer, grunt, breaker, and short fuse. And before I knew, I gained a whole lot more to lose. Except the fear, don't let it steer you. When you move with the wind, no one can hear you. Fate's your friend one day, the next it takes lives. Assume the worst, but count on snake eyes. Commando,